Welcome to the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and this is episode 86, an action plan for preventing teacher burnout. This is a bonus training accompanying the virtual Instructional Leadership Challenge. And today I'm going to share with you three action steps that you can take to deal with and intervene in situations of teacher burnout. If you see teacher burnout coming, or maybe if you are the one who's burning out, I wanted to share with you three specific strategies today for stopping burnout in its tracks and making this a sustainable job for everyone in your organization. So the three strategies we're going to talk about today, and I'm going to back each of these with some big ideas as well as specific action steps you can take within each step, within each element of this plan, are first to help teachers set clear boundaries on their work hours. We've got people working incredibly hard as we go through the pandemic. We've got people working very long hours, putting in a lot of extra time, and that has several negative effects that we're going to talk about first. The second element of this action plan is to identify the high impact work that teachers are doing and protect that and prioritize that, but also identify the low impact work that may be consuming far too much of teachers' time. And we can eliminate that if we identify it and set the expectation that that does not need to happen. And then finally, we need to endorse the idea that good enough is good enough, and we need to actually stigmatize perfectionism, because that's what is going to lead to burnout in times like these. And because this is an unusual time, I think we've got to be very careful about re-examining some of our professional norms and deciding if they really serve us well. For example, there is the norm in our profession that educators should do whatever it takes. Whatever it takes to ensure student learning, that's what we're going to do. Whatever it takes to meet students' needs, that's what we're going to do. Normally, that's a great attitude to have, but it's not always a good plan. And I think right now, it's actually a very toxic and destructive plan if, in reality, we're unable to fully meet students' needs, right? I know lots of districts are fully virtual, fully remote, and I don't think there is any district, I don't think there's any educator anywhere who would say that they are fully able to meet 100% of students' needs just as they would in person in a virtual context. Like there just are going to be things that do not work well for many of our students. And when we don't accept that, when we only accept this is like normal, only virtual, you know, and when we have this sense that we're going to do whatever it takes to fully achieve our goals for students, we're setting ourselves up for failure because what we're committing to really is impossible. So I want to suggest to you that we've got to set aside that mindset of whatever it takes and instead focus on what we can do. There is a normal kind of expectation that teachers bring to their work as they settle into a professional rhythm, right? If you remember back to when you were a new teacher, a first year teacher, right? Your workload is just incredible. It's just off the charts. It's insane. Everything is new to you. Everything is difficult. You've got to figure everything out as you go, you know, from, you know, where do students turn in their papers to what do you do if students don't have a pencil to the curriculum and assessment and just everything about being a teacher is new. And over time, you settle into some routines that make that workload manageable. And there is normally some parity between the amount of work you have to do and the amount of time you have to do that work within, right? You eventually get yourself to a reasonable work day, and you know that your work can get done within that kind of container. But now that so many people are working from home, or maybe you have teachers working in person, but they're supporting students who are both in person and other students who are virtual, you know, the work no longer fits in the usual container for so many of our teachers. And in order to deal with that, many teachers are working longer and longer hours, and you may be working longer and longer hours to deal with the additional work created by the pandemic and by virtual learning and all the different implications of those factors. So we're not used to having more work than we can fit into our workday, right? And except when you're brand new, when something is changing, normally we can fit our work into the workday or whatever time beyond what one might consider a normal workday that we choose to allocate. For example, maybe you answer email every night. Maybe that's just part of your workday. You've chosen that, you've accepted that, and it is what it is, and it's been that way for a long time. Right now, we're pushed even beyond that in our profession. Many educators are really burning the candle at both ends and cannot sustain that because they're on the path to burnout. So what is burnout? Let's define that a little bit. There's a great NIH paper that you can download from the internet if you want to read more about kind of a formal definition of burnout. But the three big indicators of burnout that I found in this paper are exhaustion, alienation from work, and reduced performance. And of course, it's not unusual to be exhausted, but it is unusual to be exhausted all year and to be exhausted, you know, no matter what is going on, right? This has been an exhausting school year for so many people. That by itself is not enough, but when we start to lose hope that what we're exhausting ourselves for is actually working, we start to get alienated, we start to get cynical, we start to disconnect. And just the changes that people have gone through, you know, the different policy changes and the different guidance that people are getting from authorities really has created this sense of kind of cynicism that can lead to alienation and disengagement. And then ultimately that leads to reduced performance. And people really have a struggle when it comes to just doing the basics of their work. So we've got to keep people from getting to that point. We can't just say, well, you know, everybody's going to do their best work. And if they can't do it, then we'll replace them. We're not going to replace people this year, right? This is, we need to work with the people we have. We need to support the people we have, and we need to set them up for success. But success cannot be 100% of our normal results that we expect. The normal standard that we hold ourselves to is not going to be meetable due to circumstances beyond our control. So what do we do when we want to do our very best work for students? We want to be successful. We want to set our students up for success, but there are some hard limits on what we're able to accomplish. My suggestion is that instead of focusing on results or outcomes or data, we focus on practice. We do right by our students by doing the right things to the very best of our ability, but then we draw boundaries around that. We say there is a limit on what I can do, and no matter what I can do, I cannot do everything. Perfection is not attainable. Perfection is not attainable right now. We cannot get perfect results for our students, but we're going to do everything we can within some boundaries that keep us all from burning out. So that idea of boundaries and of helping teachers feel a sense of success, even if the student results don't show that, you know, we can prevent that alienation and that burnout by defining success in terms of practice, not outcomes. A lot of what I'm going to share with you today stems from a book that I read many years ago with some tremendous original research in it from Roy Baumeister and his colleagues in his research lab. Roy Baumeister is a psychiatrist and an experimental psychologist, who's done a ton of incredible experiments on what you and I might think of as mental energy. And his book, written with journalist John Tierney, is called Willpower, Rediscovering the Greatest Human Strength. And in that book, they share the evidence base for this concept of willpower or mental energy, or what they call ego depletion. We're going to think of it in terms of mental energy for our purposes here. And the basic idea is that you have a limited amount of mental energy every day, and you can use that for whatever you do throughout the day. Your decision-making, your self-regulation, your thinking, all of that draws on your store of mental energy. Just like your phone has a battery, and if you record a bunch of videos or upload a bunch of stuff from the internet, or make your phone into a Wi-Fi hotspot for someone else, that's all going to drain the battery, and you're going to have to charge that battery at the end of the day. Our mental batteries get charged every night by rest, you know, by sleep, by taking care of ourselves, by doing something other than working all the time. But if we are especially tired or especially stressed or just difficult things are happening, that's going to cause that battery to drain a little faster. And the metaphor of a battery works surprisingly well based on Baumeister's research. It really is a great way to think about our mental capacity and our ability to do work. And of course, We're the freshest in the morning. Maybe you're not especially a morning person, but our batteries are fully charged in the morning. And once you wake up and kind of get into the rhythm of the day, you know you do your best work before you're drained, right? If you have some important task that's going to be cognitively demanding, you want to do that before anything that's going to drain that energy, right? And it's natural that throughout the day, that energy gets consumed by whatever you're spending your time on. And at the end of the day, you've got to rest and recharge. So that rest and relaxation and recharging is absolutely essential. And we know it's essential because if we skip it, that battery is not fully charged the next day, right? There's a reason that most adults do not pull all-nighters on a regular basis. We know if I stay up all night working on something, it's going to basically ruin the following day. I'm just not going to have the energy I need to get through that day. And in normal times, we have some sort of cutoff point where we go home, we stop working, we stop doing the things that consume our energy, at least the work-related things. We might have some more family or personal things that consume our mental energy. But then ultimately in the evening, we start doing the things that recharge our mental energy. But if we keep working all evening, all night, if we keep doing those kind of work-related things that don't recharge us, but instead continue to drain us, what's going to happen is that we are going to fail to recharge our batteries for tomorrow. And this is especially difficult when people are working from home and don't have a clear, you know, I'm at work versus I'm at home and not working kind of breakdown. You know, the physical act of going to work and going home creates a lot of that boundary for people. And working from home is not familiar to a lot of teachers. And as a result, they can end up working all the time and stressing themselves out, even if to someone else, you know, who looks at that situation, someone else might say, working from home, you got it made. You don't have to be on campus. You don't have to be in the building around other people. This should be easy, right? Well, not necessarily. The lack of a boundary can actually be incredibly difficult to deal with for teachers who are committed, who are working hard, and who are dedicated to their students. So we've got to make sure that teachers are able to recharge their batteries. And you've got to make sure that you are able to recharge your batteries every day. Because if you don't, it will quickly manifest itself in your work. You will very quickly realize that failing to invest in your personal capacity quickly has implications for your ability to do good work. And I like to think about this in terms of a pyramid, right? Like Maslow's hierarchy is a pyramid where you have those basic physiological needs at the bottom. And just in this simplified form, everyone has to have their own personal life in a certain degree of order in order to do well in their profession and in their specific role, right? We're not going to be effective in our work if we're not sleeping at night, if we're not eating, if we're not healthy. It's going to quickly cause a problem. And if work itself is the problem, we can't simply sacrifice from our personal lives to make that turn out okay, right? If we have a crack in the foundation of the pyramid and we're not able to sleep, we're not able to see our family, we're not able to eat dinner, you know, we're eating cereal in the principal's office at 9 p.m. because we're, you know, we're working all the time, that is going to have an immediate impact on our performance on the job. So there's this misunderstanding about this, though, that if teachers work more or if you work more, that that's going to be better. We run into some real hard limits on that idea that we can just work harder, work more, and get better results. We quickly undermine our own capacity if we don't invest in that personal foundational layer of the pyramid. So what does that mean for us when it comes to preventing teacher burnout? It means that we need to insist that teachers stop working at night. It is not okay to work 24/7. And as leaders, it's our responsibility to explicitly say so and to model not working all the time. And this hasn't been a problem for a lot of people for many years because, again, when they leave, you know, I know many teachers who only do their schoolwork when they're at school and then they go home and they're not working. Now, I personally almost always took things home because I felt like I would be more effective if I had a little bit of a break. And everybody handles this differently. But I think now that, you know, that teachers are dealing with such an increased workload and many people are working from home, we have to be very explicit about this idea of stopping work at a certain point, right? Teachers should not be answering email all through dinner, all through the evening and all night, right? They should be actually not working for a good chunk of the day, right? So action item one that I have for you in this training is to help teachers set clear boundaries on their work, to actually have work hours. And there are many ways that we can encourage this and promote this. Again, I think a lot of it starts with modeling, but we can go beyond just modeling. We can avoid pinging teachers at all hours of the day and night with emails that we know are going to show up on their phone or show up on their computer and kind of send the expectation that they should be reading that right now. You can send emails during work hours. One way to do that is only to write emails during work hours and then send them immediately. But if you choose to work on a slightly different schedule than your teachers, you can also schedule your emails to not be sent until a certain time later. Most email programs have a way that you can delay the sending of a message that you've already written, and then it goes out at the time you specify so that it's not arriving during the evening or other times when you expect teachers not to be working. We've also got to set the right expectations, right? If we expect teachers to get back to us, they're going to figure that out and they're going to realize that they need to be available at all hours. So that's something that we have to change as an expectation. And then of course the verbal expression of our expectations matters too. We have to explicitly tell people that they need to stop working at a certain time. And we might not dictate when that is. We might not say 5:30, no more work. You know, we might leave that up to the individual, but we need to be clear about the expectation that at some point work has to stop. You cannot work all the time and still recharge those batteries for tomorrow. So that's action item number one. But there's a little bit of an additional layer to this idea that we have to have boundaries, that we have to have a hard stop to the day. And it comes from a somewhat unlikely source. There was a speaker and an author and kind of an essayist named Cyril Northcote Parkinson, who lived in the 20th century. He was a naval historian, a naval officer, historian, a British civil servant, and he liked to poke fun at the bureaucracy of the UK. And he worked within that bureaucracy. He'd been noticing how it functioned for many years. And he noticed that in the UK Foreign Office, the British Foreign Office that oversaw the administration of the colonies under colonialism, he noticed that that office expanded to its largest size. It had the most employees at the time when it was shuttered because there were no more colonies, right? Colonialism ended and that particular office closed, but it had grown to its largest size ever at the time when it was almost entirely superfluous and then ultimately ended up being closed. And he asked himself, why did they have so many employees if as colonies gained independence, there was less and less work to do? And Parkinson formulated his famous law as work expands to fill the time available for its completion. He has a lot of interesting things to say about bureaucracy and how bureaucracies invent work for themselves to do, and hire people to do work that they just made up. It didn't really need to be done, but they just kind of invent it. And that's interesting in its own right to me as a student of organizational science, but it also applies on a very personal level, that our work personally expands to fill the time we give it. It's kind of like a gas that takes the shape of its container, right? If you put a gas into a sealed container, it's not going to sit at the bottom. It's going to expand into all of the space that you give it. So if you have a closed up bottle, that gas is going to be dispersed throughout the bottle. And if you take off the lid, if you uncork the bottle and let that gas escape, it's going to, right? It's not going to sit in the bottle. It is going to expand and ultimately spill out of the bottle because that's what gases do. Work, according to Parkinson's metaphor here, is the same way. If we don't have a lid on our workday, that work is going to spill out into every moment of our lives. And this is a battle that we've been facing as leaders for many years, but it is a new one, and it's an especially acute one for teachers right now who can be found at all hours via email, who can prep all night if they want to for tomorrow, who can come in on the weekends to record videos for their students, you know, in their classroom, maybe they want to demonstrate something. For many teachers, there is not a lid on the bottle. There is no limit to their work hours, and we've got to put one in place. When we do, we might be concerned that if we put some limits in place that teachers' work will suffer, but I think actually the opposite happens. When we put a boundary in place and say, you know what, you've got to go home. Don't come in on the weekends, stay home, you know, get some rest, enjoy your family, enjoy your personal time. When we put a hard stop in place, people actually make better prioritization decisions, right? If you've ever left during the middle of the day because you got sick, have you ever been at work and gotten sick and realized, okay, I've got to get these things done. I need to go home, but I still got to get these couple of things done. One day I did that. I was sick. I shouldn't have been at school. My secretary told me, Justin, you've got to go home. I said, okay, I got to get these three things done. I thought I had all day. I'm going to get them done by noon and get out of here so I don't get anyone else sick. So I did. And lo and behold, I got all three of those things done to a perfectly fine standard. I did not have to cut corners. All I had to do was prioritize and get those things done. And that is often the case, that if we give ourselves less time to work with, that work will not expand as much as it will if we give it all day or if we don't set a boundary at all. And the reason this works is that we simply make better prioritization decisions when we have a constraint. If I can stay all night and work, you know, till 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, I'm not going to be as careful about how I spend my time if I know I have to get out of here at noon or 5:30 or whatever boundary I set. So those boundaries actually do people a favor and improve the quality of their work. So action item one for this training is to help teachers set clear boundaries on their work. Because the harder they work, the longer they work, the more effort they're putting into low-value work. And the poorer those prioritization decisions get, the longer people work. So what happens when people start to spend time on things that don't matter as much, right? They're not putting a limit in place. They're working all hours. They are not going home when they should. They're checking email at night. They're doing all these things that lack that boundary. What is it that's going on there? Well, to understand this dynamic, we're going to turn to something called the Pareto Principle that was discovered hundreds of years ago by the Italian economist Vilfredo Pareto. And he discovered this principle operating in many different areas of life. For example, in his garden, he noticed that 80% of the peas that were produced by his pea plants came from just 20% of the plants. And the other 80% of the plants were responsible for only the remaining 20%. He also noticed it in his work as an economist. He noticed that 80% of the wealth in Italy and 80% of the land in Italy were controlled by just 20% of the families, and the other 80% of the population controlled over only 20% of the wealth. And this is now known as the 80-20 rule or the Pareto principle. And the basic idea is that 80% of our results come from only 20% of our efforts, and the other 80% of our efforts are only producing the other 20% of our results. In other words, not everything has an equal impact. Not everything that we do is equally impactful in terms of creating the results that we want. That is true for you as a leader. That is true for spending. Probably, you know, 80% of your budget goes to things that do not produce the most important results in your household. You know, there are certain things that you spend money on that make a bigger difference than others. And it's true for teachers, that 80% of the results they get for students depend on roughly 20% of their efforts. Not all efforts have an equal impact. So what that means is we have a prioritization opportunity here, and that brings us to action item number two, to identify high and low impact work that teachers are doing and help them eliminate 80% or more of the most time-consuming, low-value work. And right now, some of that lowest value, most time-consuming work is around originality and around reinventing the wheel and saying, okay, this is my class, so I'm going to do things my way. I'm going to make everything up on my own, instead of using the resources that already exist, instead of sharing the workload with other people in the team or department or other people who teach the same subject, maybe in a different school. We're putting a ton of effort into reinventing the wheel and having teachers do the same work in parallel, essentially duplicating their effort when they could be collaborating and dividing that workload and eliminating a lot of that redundancy that's in place. And if we as leaders can give people permission to collaborate and share and, you know, not be completely original about everything, but borrow and use things that they find online, use the resources that we have available, we're going to see a tremendous time savings for our teachers. Another way that we can eliminate low value work is to look at activities that really were just designed to keep kids busy. And in a school day where you have kids on campus, to be honest, a lot of what we have kids spend time on is not the most impactful, right? It's we something we need to do to fill the day, but it's not necessarily that high value activity. And I see that in my own children's work. You know, you can remember your experience in school. Was everything equally valuable as a learning experience? Definitely not. And this is a time when we have to cut back, not only as educators, but we have to cut back for our students. So if we can eliminate a lot of their work that's lower value, that's going to save teachers work on both prep and grading and on giving feedback to students. And it's going to make students more successful because they are focused on more of what matters for their own learning. So some specific steps you can take for action item number two to help teachers eliminate 80% or more of the work that's not producing most of their results. We can encourage curation, right? Don't make something up yourself. Don't make something up from scratch. Find it. Someone else has probably already created it. That video explaining a concept has probably already been made and probably already put on the internet. So find it and use it. And don't feel like you have to reinvent the wheel. We can encourage new divisions of labor. We can encourage people to share materials and plans across schools, not even just within their department, but across the district or across a network of schools. And third, we can strive to eliminate anything that is more designed to keep students busy and not designed to have a big impact on student learning. And this is an ongoing process. We're not gonna accomplish this with one fell swoop, but we need to put a bug in people's ear about doing less so that we can focus more on that 20% that's making the 80% difference. And that brings us to action item number three, to let go of the idea of perfectionism and accept the idea that good enough is good enough. We have got to endorse the idea of good enough and actually stigmatize perfectionism. And there's a concept from the organizational studies literature that's called satisficing that was defined by administration pioneer Herbert Simon. And he was a big pioneer in the field of organizational decision making. And he came up with this concept of satisficing to describe how people make decisions in organizations. But as with Parkinson, I think his research has a ton to say about our work as individual educators as well. So what is satisficing? Satisficing is a portmanteau of the words satisfy and suffice. It's the idea that good enough is good enough. And if you have ever seen a man shop for something at a store, you have seen satisficing in action, right? If I need a belt, I'm going to go into a store, I'm going to look at the belts, I'm going to pick one out that's good enough, and I'm going to get out of there. Good enough is good enough. I'm not going to spend 5 hours picking out the perfect belt and going to all these different stores and comparing them and reading reviews online. I am going to quickly take the action that I need to take. It's going to be good enough, and I'm going to be done. That is not how most educators approach their work. In far too many areas, we are perfectionists, right? We want things to be perfect. We want them to be better than the thing we found online. We want them to be better. We want the lesson plan to be better than the one we got from our colleague. So we work much harder than we need to instead of satisficing. So as a leader, you can explicitly give people permission to say good enough is good enough. But people don't want to do that because they feel guilty, right? They feel guilty that we can't fully meet our students' needs. We can't fully solve all of the problems that we're facing. You know, if a student does not have internet at home or does not have a quiet place to do their work or just is not motivated to do their work at home and we want to be there in person with them to motivate them, it's very frustrating to us as educators and we feel guilty that we can't meet their needs. And one way that educators tend to respond to guilt is simply by working harder, even if it won't actually solve the problem, right? There is no amount of work you can do to give a student Wi-Fi if they don't have Wi-Fi, right? A better lesson plan will not compensate for a lack of Wi-Fi in a student's home. And yet, this is what we see. Educators working harder and harder out of a sense of guilt at all the problems they can't solve. And you can tell the difference between a solvable and an unsolvable problem by asking yourself, if I could work 24/7, if I could just put in every waking hour and all the sleeping hours into solving this problem, could I? For many of the challenges that our students are facing right now, the answer is no. No amount of planning and preparation and grading and doing extra work could solve some of the problems that we're seeing in the pandemic. They are inherent to the situation, not a result of our shortcomings as educators. So those are places where we have got to really step back and take a look at what we're doing and if we're doing things that perhaps we don't need to do. And a great way to ask yourself, kind of the next step question is, what if I could only work half as many hours? What if instead of working 12 hours today, I only had to work 6? Or what if I only had to work 3 hours? You know, what if I had to get everything done in 3 hours? What would I do? You would do something. You would make a prioritization decision. And that's probably what you should do, even if you do plan to work the full 12 hours today. So that question of what really matters is a difficult one for us to answer as educators, because we like to say that everything matters. So we're willing to do whatever it takes, but whatever it takes is probably still not going to get us the results we want in times like these. So it's time to let go of perfectionism. And when you see teachers operating from a mindset of perfectionism and operating from a sense of guilt that they can't do everything they would like to be able to do to help their students succeed, you can step in and you can start to change that mindset. So how do we do that? How do we shift this mindset around perfectionism? Well, one thing we can do is we can, as we've discussed several times, discourage the idea of original everything, right? We do not have to reinvent the wheel. Teachers do not have to make their own lesson plans from scratch. They can share, they can borrow, they can get things off of the internet. We've got to discourage originality because there is not time for it this year. If you want to write a great original unit over the break or over the summer and just knock your students' socks off with that next year, great. Now is not the time to invest in originality. Second, going right along with that, we can encourage sharing of preparation duties and sharing of materials across teams and even across schools, so that if somebody puts together a great lesson video, everybody can use that. If somebody puts together a great Google Slides activity for students to use. I know my kids are doing activities that were built by other teachers, and I love seeing that teachers are sharing those. That's going to free people up to focus on the work that only they can do for their students. And then finally, I think we've got to cut back on the expectations for students, because if we're trying to keep students busy for 8 hours a day, that's going to take up a lot of teacher time and a lot of student time that's not going to contribute to learning. So we've got to stigmatize perfectionism, because that is people's default way of dealing with a situation that is not the way they want it to, right? A lot of this is about control. It's a reaction to situations that are beyond our control. We try to do everything we can perfectly, and yet it's still not enough. So we've got to help our people let go of perfectionism and realize that good enough is good enough, and help people satisfice. So to recap a bit of our action plan from this training. First, we've got to help teachers set clear boundaries on their work hours. No teacher should be working 100 hours a week. We have got to scale things back to the point that it's manageable, that people can recharge their batteries, they can have non-work hours, they do not need to be checking email at all hours of the day and night. And then we've got to eliminate as much of the 80% of that low-value work as possible and cut back just to those essentials that are making the biggest difference. And then finally, we've got to stigmatize the sense of perfectionism that so many teachers are working from and endorse a satisficing, good enough is good enough mindset. So what I'd like to ask you to do as we close out this training is to think about specific people. Who in your organization needs to hear one of these messages? Who needs to realize that they can set boundaries around their workday? It may be you. You may be the first person who needs to hear this and realize this for yourself. And then once you have taken that seriously in your life and have internalized that and have started to model that, you can give permission to other people to set those boundaries. So ask yourself, who's at risk of burning out? Is it me? Do I have certain teachers who are normally so high performing and perfectionists that this is not working for them and they really need a new mindset to avoid burning out? And then what boundaries do they need to put in place? How do they need to cut back? How do they need to be given permission to cut back and eliminate some of that low value work? And where could they be persuaded to maybe cut some effort? Not necessarily cut corners, because we want things to still be good. We don't want people to just stop caring, but we want people to truly prioritize where they put their efforts in so that it's into something that truly matters. So ask yourself who, ask yourself what they need to do, and start with yourself. And then model that same self-care and that same sense of boundaries and good enough is good enough for your staff. That's it for this training. Thanks so much for being a part of it. Let me know what you think. I would love to hear from you. Take care.